Coming up on Tech News Today, what's the Chromebook Pixel for? Why HP's crappy earnings are good news? And North Korea loosens up a little bit on mobile. Is it a good thing? All that and more coming up.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for Tech News Today is provided by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com.
This is Tech News Today for Friday, February 22nd, 2013. Tech News Today is brought to you by Squarespace, the all-in-one platform that makes it fast and easy to create a professional website, blog, portfolio, and now an online store. Check out their new commerce solution so you can start selling stuff immediately. For a free trial and 10% off your first purchase on new accounts, go to squarespace.com and use offer code TNT2. Welcome to Tech News Today. I'm Tom Merritt.
I'm Sarah Lane.
I'm Aya Zaktar.
And I'm Jason Owl.
And this is the show that keeps you up to date on the most important stories in the tech world, puts them in context for you, starting with the top 10 stories of the day in the news feed. Zendesk, a customer service software company, announced a hacker accessed support information from three of their clients this week. The information included email addresses and subject lines, no passwords or anything like that. Wired reports that the three clients were Twitter, Pinterest, and Tumblr. All three companies have sent email to affected users.
Google has launched a $1,300 Chromebook. It's called the Pixel. It has a 2560 by 1700, almost 13-inch touchscreen, Core i5 CPU, 1 terabyte of Google Drive storage, and optional LTE. And for that price, I'm pretty sure it's also a unicorn, which is why Tom has already ordered one.
The newest Dish Hopper is facing a lawsuit from Fox. The newest Hopper lets viewers play shift recorded in live television. Fox is asking for a preliminary injunction in federal court in Los Angeles, saying the services breach Dish's licensing agreement and also infringe on Fox's copyrights.
Want to get some Google Glass on your face without having to apply or be a developer or pay $1,500? Well, good news, everyone. The Verge reports Google plans to release a fully polished version of Google Glass to consumers by the end of the year. The headset will cost less than $1,500 when it goes on sale, according to what Google told The Verge.
$14.99, I bet.
Yeah, right.
North Korea will soon start allowing foreigners mobile access while within the country, which is more relaxation of controls on communications in recent weeks for those visiting North Korea. However, citizens will not have the same access to this mobile internet service. It'll be offered by provider Koryolink within the next week.
European Commissioner for Competition Joaquin Almunia says that Google may reach a settlement soon, putting an end to a European Union probe into Google's search practices. The settlement could be accomplished in the second half of this year. The EU probe looked into whether Google was promoting its own services and whether Google was copying other sites' content, amongst other things.
Earnings reports always make for the strangest good news. HP announced revenue was down 6% to $28.4 billion with earnings per share of 82 cents. And revenue declines in pretty much every department of their business. And everyone cheered. That's because analysts expected the decline to be worse. So CEO Meg Whitman gets credit for at least slowing the decline of HP. Well done.
Soon, smartphone makers won't have to think about which LTE frequency to support in their new handsets after Qualcomm revealed its new RF360 front-end solution with support for 40 mobile bands worldwide, which is very good news for mobile companies. Qualcomm's RF360 chip will be available in the second half of 2013 and will support all 7 cellular frequencies, which include LTE FDD, LTE TDD, WCDMA, EVDO, CDMA 1X, TD-SCDMA, and GSM. Edge.
Easy for you to say.
Isn't it?
NBC's website was blacklisted by Google and blocked by Facebook yesterday after being infected by the Citadel Trojan. The malware usually targets bank websites in an attempt to steal usernames, passwords, and other sensitive data. The NBC site is now back online and clear of infection. It still, however, can infect you with laughter from its highly rated comedies and talk shows.
Okay. Want to watch the movies nominated for Best Animated Short Film? Well, you're not going to do that on YouTube. All 5 films nominated for that award were pulled from YouTube. According to Deadline, the CEO of distributor Shorts International urged the nominees to pull their shorts from YouTube because it could cause significant, if not irreparable, damage to their theatrical release. Because there is no other way to watch Hollywood content other than the theater, right?
Brilliant. Right. Absolutely. This episode of Tech News Today brought to you by Squarespace, the all-in-one platform that makes it fast and easy to create a professional website, blog, online portfolio. And Squarespace now makes it fast and easy to create a store. The new commerce solution allows you to instantly create a store and start selling products. Squarespace Commerce provides powerful and flexible e-commerce solutions. So when you're in that Squarespace template and you're making your content and you're focusing on the content, and you're not worrying about what it's going to look like because you picked one of their great templates and you customized it a little bit to your desire. And then you know they've got the mobile responsive designs so that your template works on whatever device somebody's accessing your website with. Now you can feel the same way about your online store. Both physical and digital goods. If you're just selling MP3s, that works. If you're selling actual hardcover books, that works too. Fast merchant account setup so you can accept payments right away, credit or debit cards. One interface for order management and track your orders, provide customer email updates, print shipping labels, add coupons. Squarespace Commerce is included with the business plan subscription. That's $30 a month. But it actually starts at $24 a month if you sign up for a year at once. And there's always a good reason to sign up for the year because you get the entire Squarespace social media integration, all those designs that I was talking about, and you get 10% off when you use the code TNT2. Squarespace is an all-in-one platform integrating all your website needs, domains, design, development, commerce, hosting, 24/7 customer support. For a free trial, though, you don't have to spend a dime to give it a whirl. Go to squarespace.com, sign up for a free account. Don't need to give them a credit card number or nothing. Just try it out. Start building your website. And if you decide to purchase it, use that offer code I mentioned, TNT2. Get 10% off your first purchase on new accounts, whether it's a monthly or an annual plan. And don't forget about free domain registration for annual plan subscriptions. That's squarespace.com. Use that offer code TNT2. Show your support for Tech News Today. Everything you need to create an exceptional website at squarespace.com. We thank them for their support. All right, it's Friday, so it's good to have Darren Kitchen from Hack 5 alongside. You're coming to us from England?
Yes, I am in Birmingham, the City of a Thousand Trades, and I'm living the spirit of Liquid Friday with the Hack 5 meetup post this TNT here in Birmingham. So I'll be raising a pint for you, Tom and Sarah and I, as
please do.
Jason, of course.
Ozzy Osbourne from Birmingham as well, so there's your tie-in.
Maybe you'll see him.
Yeah.
There'll be bats.
He might just be swinging by his hometown. Probably not. Well, it's good to have you along, man. Let's start off talking about this Chromebook Pixel, Iaz.
Yeah, right after TNT went off the air yesterday, Google released the Chromebook Pixel, much to my consternation. The Pixel is designed by Google and sold as a Google product. It's not by Samsung or Acer. Google's not even telling people who the OEM is who made this. 3.3 pounds, 12.85-inch display. Resolution is crazy, 2560 by 1700. With a 3:2 aspect ratio. Now, Google says they did that because web content is still more vertical than horizontal. It's got a higher pixel per inch count than the 13-inch MacBook Pro Retina. It does have a touchscreen. Inside, you got your i5. If you compare that to the other cheaper Chromebooks, that has ARM-based processors. This is an Intel. You got a terabyte of Google Drive cloud storage for 3 years, starting on the date you redeemed the offer. Two models, 32-gigabyte Wi-Fi model for $1,300. 64-gigabyte model has LTE from Verizon for $1,450. Tom, I know you ordered this. It starts at $1,300. Has Google lost its mind?
Originally I thought so, and I'm buying one just to try it out. I may turn around and send it right back. Who knows? It was funny. When I bought it, it triggered a fraud alert on my credit card. Because, I don't know, maybe they're like, who would pay that much for that machine? It's a Chromebook. They're supposed to be like $250. And I was on British Tech Mac yesterday. We were discussing this. Or, I'm sorry, British Tech Big Show, not the Mac Show. And we were all trying to figure out, like, the whole proposition with the Chromebook has been that it's cheap, right? You know, for $250, you don't need to install desktop software. You can live in the cloud. All the stuff that I've read since then has suggested that what Google's doing here is not trying to make a hit. they're not actually trying to sell a ton of these. What they're trying to do is what they're doing with Google Fiber in Kansas City. They're trying to show what can be done. And right now it's expensive. But if they get this in the hands of a few people, maybe some developers, and folks start to realize, oh, well, Chrome OS actually is really nice when you're on a nice machine, then eventually that will trickle down and they'll be able to put out more affordable machines and more people will develop for Chrome OS and it'll get better.
I like this idea. Show what can be done. Darren, do you think this is the Nexus Q or is this going to be a hit?
I don't know. I guess it depends on who it's for. And so some people this is definitely for and they're going to be really excited about it. For me, you know, what do I do when I boot up my computer? Well, I open Chrome and I open Terminal. And so it's not for me. And for a lot of other people looking for a notebook in this price range with this kind of resolution and speed and whatnot, there may be creative professionals that are going to feel that the Chrome experience is a little lackluster. But like Tom says, it's a chicken and egg problem. You can't get those rich applications until you have rich hardware to run it on. So I don't know. I think it's just going to be, for me, I look at it more of like a dev device than anything else, just because, you know, otherwise, what does it really say about Google's other Chromebook offerings?
Sarah, people obviously like well-designed, you know, well-machined products. I mean, people love Apple products for that reason. This looks to be, it's really beautiful. It's not like those cheap plastic things from Samsung or Acer. Do you think with all the little added bonuses, you get a terabyte for 3 years, you get 12 free GoGo in-flight internet passes, so it's not useless on an airplane. Is that enough to overcome that price tag?
Kind of. Well, not for me. This is not something that I'm going to buy, but I think that the whole, hey, I get a terabyte of Google Drive cloud storage. I've got it for 3 years. I've got these in-flight internet passes. Maybe I do a lot of traveling. The machine certainly looks nice. The price, everyone freaked out over the price just because it's so much higher than other Chromebooks that we're used to. And I have a hard time getting past the screen ratio just because it feels like it's going backwards. But Google does make a very good point that, hey, if you're mostly working in the web, you don't really need a 16:9 kind of experience or anything that's capable of widescreen because you're not really watching movies and all of that stuff. So in a way, I think it's less about the hardware and more about the package.
Well, that's the other thing about Chromebooks is that it can be updated by Google. So in like 6 weeks, this thing could be totally different. I mean, when Google changed the UI for Chrome OS, I would expect a lot of things to change. I know in CNET's experience, they tried it out, and there were some demos that didn't work exactly right. And Google says that it was actually a software issue with Chrome OS because the operating system isn't optimized yet for this touchscreen. And I bet it's going to get changed a bit once there's an update. So I don't know where Chrome's going to go. It might become much more touch-friendly in the long run. But the thing is, this thing has a future because Google's going to keep updating it from the back end. I'm very curious how this is going to go. Premium product, I think it's a good thing because they're not going to annoy their other partners as well. No way Samsung is going to say, you're trying to undercut us. It's like, that's way more expensive.
I think another thing everyone's curious where it's going to go is HP, and they had their earnings yesterday, as I mentioned. Revenue down 6%, but analysts positive because they expected it to be down 7.5%. Now, across the board, things not looking so great, though. The Personal Systems Group, which is where the PCs are, was down 8%. Year over year. Printing, the printer place where they actually make a lot of their money, declined 5% year over year. The enterprise group declined 4%. Enterprise services declined 7%. Software revenue, which had been up, had been a bright spot for them last quarter, was down 2% year over year. The only thing that grew year over year was HP Financial Services. I don't even know what they do in there. I don't know what part of the business that is. And most people just ignored it because it's not part of their core enterprise. Now, in the earnings call, Meg Whitman said, we're seeing these declines, but they're slowing. They're not as big as they used to be. And they're not as bad as expected. And we have no plans to break up the company. I feel quite strongly that we are better and stronger together. Darren, what does this mean for HP?
Oh, you're muted.
We can't hear you there. There we go.
Oh, sorry. Yeah. It helps when words come out of my mouth. I'm not sure. It's sad to watch the decline of HP. They've had like a couple of fumbles in the past, especially like with the touchpad and whatnot. And I don't know. I don't know what's inside their corporate culture anymore. And I honestly have no idea.
You know, what's interesting in here is in the Personal Systems Group, the desktop sales rose 10%, while the notebook sales fell 14%. Total unit sales fell 5%. So they were actually selling desktops, bucking the trend.
I guess that's a good thing if you're bucking that trend. But, I mean, the desktop sales in general are going down. So if you're the leader in a failing market, that's a good thing. I'm not really sure where that's going. I know HP's problems when it came to laptops was the fact they had a real inconsistency in design. Like the power buttons would be located in different areas. Ports would be located in different areas. And one of Whitman's things was to get that all unified, to actually have the laptop teams talk to each other. I know that's crazy. I'm thinking they're banking on the future right now, but the desktop sales doing well, I think that's actually a bad thing if that's doing well, because, I mean, not a great market to be in right now. It's kind of like I make really good buggies. That's great.
Well, and Tom, you mentioned that the financial services division was the only revenue that grew, but it only grew 1%. I mean, so that's not even really a win. I mean, Meg Whitman is saying, we have no plans to break up the company. Maybe that's true, but it sounds like they are probably going to have plans to fold some of these divisions, or at least combine them, because you can't just have quarters with numbers like this for any long period of time.
No, you're right. There's a point where patience runs out. I guess the fact that analysts expected it to be worse shows that maybe they are starting to turn the boat, but it's at the very beginning of the turn, so it's hard to see where it's going. Does anybody buy HP Android devices as a solution to this?
I think it's possible, because the thing is, right now, the whole PC market, the whole what a computer is, that whole thing is being turned upside down. So the thing is, what HP has to do is, if they're going to stay as a consumer-facing brand, they have to give what consumers want. And that's going to have to be an Android-based tablet or WebOS-based tablet, whatever they want to use. I think they have to be catering to a market that's actually growing. And that would be tablet sales at this point. Because Windows 8, while it's out and everything, it's very expensive. And to say, hey, we have these products out there, buy them, they're untested, that's one thing. But to go on with a proven track record at this point, Android is quite successful and probably much more profitable. If they want to be consumer facing, they got to put it all in with Android.
Maybe they should get into the premium Chromebook market. Huh?
It's a great idea.
Yeah.
Maybe they should buy that really that really expensive phone line from Nokia. It begins with a V. I can't remember it. Like a $15,000 Android phone. That's what they should do.
Sell one of those. You're solid.
Can anybody think of an example of a consumer facing example of a device that HP has brought outside of the PC market? Because I think of some examples, like the touchpad was a horrible flop because it was so late to market and too expensive and all of these other things. And what was it before then? The HP iPad or iPod. So what have they done outside of, am I missing something here when it comes to HP?
Because
I just don't think of them as anything more than just, okay.
That's about all I can think of. Yeah.
Yeah.
Actually, didn't they have the WebOS powered printer? That was them, right?
Right. Yeah, they did.
Oh,
yeah.
God.
Well, maybe HP should get into gambling.
Yeah. Yeah. And enter a contract with Nevada. So Governor Brian Sandoval, governor of Nevada, signed legislation yesterday that legalizes online gambling in Nevada. Now, you might say, well, okay, Nevada, it's already known for gambling. What it allows is non-Nevada residents to legally gamble without the state needing federal legislation. So this legislation is AB 114, and it authorizes Nevada to enter into contracts with other states. This is something Nevada still has yet to do, but it authorizes Nevada to do so, to offer internet poker. Passed the Assembly and the Senate yesterday after a joint hearing between the two judiciary committees, which sort of seemed like Nevada was in a race with New Jersey. That's another state known for gambling. Governor Chris Christie over in New Jersey had previously vetoed an online wagering bill, but says that he might sign an amended version next week so Nevada can claim that they were first. And what's interesting about this is that, yeah, Nevada still needs to figure out what pacts they're going to have with other states, but this allows a state with significantly larger population, like California, for example. I mean, I think Nevada has about 3 million people in the entire state. So, sure, online gambling in Nevada, that's fine. But if Nevada can enter into agreements with other states, so the many millions of people in, you know, another state like California, for example, can gamble in Nevada legally, then they've really got something. You know, just to put this into perspective, Zynga filed for an online gambling license in Nevada back in December, hoping, of course, that this legislation was pushed through, which it since has been. If, of course, you know, Zynga being headquartered in California, if they can put those two together, well, hey, maybe I can be gambling in Nevada through Zynga pretty soon playing internet poker. But I read this and I think, what is the... Ayaz, are you surprised that there isn't more pushback from more traditional, I don't know, casinos, let's say? Is it going to change the landscape of Las Vegas or Reno?
No, I would think Nevada would be the place where everybody would be gung-ho for this. If you can be at the casinos there, this idea of like a virtual Las Vegas, because Nevada's got this locked down. I mean, they have really, really good branding when it comes to gambling at all. The idea that you go to Las Vegas, it's sometimes a family destination, considering the whole like people moral issues people have with gambling. It's actually become quite a tourist destination. If they can make online gambling as attractive, which sometimes people are like, oh, that's just dirty and silly and it's something that doesn't belong with proper things, I think that Nevada would be the right place to try to do this. I'm not surprised there's no pushback with this, because I'm sure Zynga's like, okay, if this works, we actually have another plan. We'll actually make money, and that'll be good for the company.
Darren, Christopher Tzbicki in the chat room says, VPN company in Nevada, anybody? Like, if your state doesn't come to an agreement...
You'd probably need an address and all sorts of other things. What drives me crazy about this is the whole concept of, you know, let's take the internet, which is this beautiful thing that doesn't have, you know, traditional borders and all of this stuff. And then let's shoehorn these old concepts into it. And they're like, oh, we're going to legalize, you know, gambling in Nevada internet. And then you'll have to, what, make deals with other states so that those states people can go. No, it's the internet. It's global. It drives me crazy when stuff like this happens, but it's like, okay, let the politicians think about it this way, and hopefully they'll all just die off soon. We can, you know, get the internet back to where it needs to be.
For what it's worth, companies that want to offer online gambling must first pay $500,000, and the Nevada Gaming Commission has the authority to change this amount at any time. Renewal fees are $250,000, but A.G. Burnett, who's the chairman of the Nevada Gaming Control Board, said the state already had about 20 applications from operators. So there's definitely interest from companies who can pay up.
Yeah, it's big business. And you knew this was coming, right? There may be resistance. And in fact, there may be resistance from the casinos themselves who wanted to have a lockdown on it. They like the fact that it's hard to get into it because then they can dominate the industry. And I think Ayaz totally nailed it. The casinos are going to love this because they'll use their branding, whether they operate the Zynga thing or not. But they'll go into license agreements and rake a bunch right off the top.
Mm-hmm.
Well, let's talk a little bit about Mobile World Congress kicking off February 25th, beginning of next week, runs through February 28th. You can expect the announcements to start flowing this weekend, though. A lot of people trying to get pre-announcements in. Lots of great articles out there. All Things D has a great one. PC Pro in the UK has a great one about what's coming up. Nokia in the news today that they're going to offer cheaper models. That they're going to unveil a bargain line to try to get into competition in the developing markets where minimal, you know, those mid-range smartphones, they might have a cheaper Lumia phone, might sell well. You've got a bunch of press conferences coming up on Monday. LG has one, although they've already announced the Optimus G Pro, the Optimus L Series 2, the Optimus F5, and the Optimus F7, so I'm not sure what's left for their presser. Nokia has their press conference Monday, and Sony has a press conference Monday. They launched the Xperia Z at CES, if you remember. We were all a little surprised that they launched a phone at CES, so it'll be interesting to see what they come up with. And Samsung's not doing a big knockdown, drag-out. We're expecting the Galaxy 4 or the Galaxy S4 to probably come in March in a Samsung-only event. People are doing that all the time now. But we might see the Galaxy Note 8 coming at Mobile World Congress. Intel's going to be showing off their dual-core processor. NVIDIA's going to be showing off the Phoenix with Tegra 4i. Qualcomm's going to offer more details on the Snapdragon 800. So you may see more fun with the internals than the externals. But here's what's interesting. Victor Basta, managing director at Magister Advisors, according to Computer World UK, said, the past few years have been about perfecting the mobile device. Smartphones are now derivative. Innovation has already happened, and Apple's share price is suffering because of this. For 2013, all important mobile innovation will be software-based. Darren, do you agree?
No, absolutely not. I mean, I'm not I wouldn't discount hardware at all. There's still so much innovation to be done. Things like superconducting batteries, docks. We've seen some docks, but we've never seen any that really make a splash. 3D displays kind of popped. It would just, they were there and then gone, but there's still so much that can be done there. I would love to see a phone with a 1-inch CCD, and there's still so much more to be done there. While I agree that it's been a little lackluster lately because, what phone do you like? Well, I like that, big rectangular black one that's mostly screen with the button at the bottom. It's like, yes, I agree. We're all there right now, but that doesn't mean we have to stay here.
Ayaz, what do you think? I mean, I get what Darren's saying. There's definitely new hardware that could be put in, but he's also right that everything seems to be like a black slab. Is hardware innovation done?
Well, I think the thing is, by hardware innovation, it's iterative, right? So we have cameras on our devices already. We have displays, full, big giant screens. They're just upping the resolution, adding things like 3D. The idea the camera can get better, there's not a whole lot that's being added to the actual device. I mean, that makes it different from year to year. We're having the same kind of form factors with the same kind of displays that keep getting better. But the real thing is, it's how you're using the device, because that's how you're experiencing it. Whether the camera's very good or not, the software is really important. Because if it can't take a picture right away, who cares if your CCD is fantastic if it takes you 3 seconds to get that picture? So that side is extremely important, because that's what consumers are playing with day to day. And right now, you can cram in as many beautiful pieces of technology into a little slab, but if you don't have the right software for it, it's not going to work.
So what kind of software do we need to see? That's my question. What are these innovations that it can do? Because it seems like the phones are kind of the same on that level as well. They all play music. They all take pictures to varying degrees of effectiveness, certainly. I don't know what kind of innovation there could be on software. Sarah, what do you think of this whole prediction?
Well, I understand what Victor Basta is saying here, right? And he uses Apple as an example because people say, well, the iPhone hasn't really changed in a while, so Apple's sort of stuck. I mean, what do they do? Apple, of course, would say, but we have a form factor that works really well, so we're working on the innards, not the exterior. And I think that is true for a lot of other phones. I mean, there are only so many sizes that you can play with before you go, okay, consumers really like something between 4 and 6 inches, kind of thing, because that's just what's good for us. Cameras can continue to get better. Resolutions can continue to get better. Battery life is still across the board. I mean, some phones are just better at that than other phones, and I think that's really important to pretty much everybody. So it's not all software-based, but yeah, I don't think you have to get crazy creative with phone hardware just to be different anymore, because phones, for the most part, are pretty good.
That's why I was thinking, like, software like Google Now, the thing that's predicting what you want to know later on, or the cameras that take pictures before you've taken them and then after.
Yeah.
These things that they're doing, simultaneous things, that's on the software side, and that's making it way more interesting. And also with software, when it comes to battery management, I mean, obviously better batteries would be great, but if you have software management that can handle the power, that makes it much better as well.
Yeah, I think maybe, Darren, you're right, that there's more innovation, but it's internal innovation, as Sarah was saying. It's what the thing can do, maybe less than the form factor. And maybe that's what he's hitting on in this analysis, is form factor differentiation is not going to sell your phone anymore. You got to have the functionality differentiated. And often that's software, but sometimes that's internal hardware as well.
Maybe in the short term, but I don't feel like we're going to end up with, phones that you hold up to your ear and that you type on with your thumbs in, 15, 20 years from now. So I'm interested in seeing what things like Google Glass do to shake up mobile.
Right, because that, to me, that's a whole different class of devices. That's not a phone anymore, even if it has phone functionality in it. It's, wristwatches, wearable computing. That's where the adventure is going to happen. I agree with you there. Another adventure is adding mobile data service to North Korea.
North Korea really wants foreigners to have a better time, or at least to feel more connected to the rest of the world. As I mentioned in the news views, North Korea is about to let foreigners have access to the mobile web within the next week. North Korean citizens will not have the same access. This is just for people who are visiting the country or doing business within the country. So Koryolink, which is a joint venture between Korea Post and Telecommunications Corporation and Egypt's Orascom Telecom Media and Technology Holding SAE, told foreign residents in Pyongyang that it will launch 3G mobile internet service by March 1st. So again, that's very, very soon. And just a couple of weeks ago, this is sort of a relaxation trend, really. North Korea started allowing foreigners to bring their own cell phones into the country for the first time to use with Koryulink SIM cards. Usually, you had to give up all of the stuff as you went through customs. You didn't have your phone. You didn't have anything. You couldn't call anybody outside of the country. There are definitely some restrictions still. You cannot call South Korea, whether you are a resident or a foreigner or anything, when you're in North Korea, period. It's just not going to happen. And some of the rates that foreigners have to pay to access, I don't know, the U.S., for example, €5 a minute. Ooh, you'd want that phone call to be pretty quick. But I think that this is just really, really interesting. So North Koreans have, as of late, some limited access to communicate with others via mobile phones within the country, right? But they can't call outside of the country. Then you have people who are not North Korean residents coming into the country, and it's like, are they able to tweet? Can they have Skype video calls with folks around the world, provided that it's not anywhere in South Korea? Does that make sense? I mean, Darren, can you imagine keeping citizens from the same kind of technology that they might see on the street? Or are these foreigners going to be sequestered, so if I have to tweet, I'm going to have to do it where no one from North Korea will see me, because then they'll know that it exists?
Yeah, I don't know if I can possibly do that. And to me, it really boggles the mind how, you know, especially like now, right now, doing like international travel, I'm on my fourth SIM card because I'm in the fourth country, even though I've just been going through the European Union. It's fascinating. I'm kind of like wishing that there was better satellite-based stuff that doesn't have the same kind of technical limitation of depending on towers and whatnot. But as a tourist, I don't know. I guess I would just be discreet in that country no matter what. That's such a place where you have to be culturally aware.
Tom, do you think that this is something that North Korea feels forced to do because they want business entities to come into the country and help them build their infrastructure, and this is just something you have to allow, or no one's going to want to hang out in North Korea very long?
Yeah, I think that's probably exactly, well, maybe not word for word, but pretty much what Eric Schmidt told North Korean diplomats and officials when he was there on that trip, which is, if you want anybody spending any kind of money helping you build your infrastructure, you got to loosen up.
Yeah.
And of course, this is a North Korean reaction, which is like, great, we'll loosen up for you and not for our own people. And frankly, I don't know that I would feel safe using that network for anything at all. I would think it would be very limited what I'd be willing to transmit, because you got to assume that every single thing, I mean, I always assume that every single thing I put on the internet is probably eavesdropped on anyway, but you don't know what these folks are going to do with it. You say the wrong thing and all of a sudden you're unpersoned. It's certainly not a bad step, right? But it's not nearly what we need to see there.
What do you think, Ayaz? North Korea, maybe in the summer?
Oh, yeah. That's where I'll be going. I'll visit there and not be on the internet, really. It just seems like a really strange idea that you would potentially see, well, lockdown internet versus no internet. Or like this. I don't understand how this information would stay with just the tourists. Like, how would this information not spread from person to person? When you allow a tourist in the first place, that's obviously a risk. But this idea that there's a device that can show, oh, by the way, look, I can show you what's going on. Really, that seems really odd. I'm not really sure how exactly North Korea plans on really keeping everything locked down. If they're going to be monitoring everything, do you want to go there to do that? I'm just really perplexed by it.
Yeah, it almost seems like they're expecting that there will be large parts of the North Korean population that will get extremely interested in this and then break the law and then be punished or fined. Or, you know, it's like, I don't think you could realistically say foreigners will have all of these rights that the local people do not have, and that's going to be fine. I think that it sounds like there's going to be quite a bit of strife involved.
Yeah, that's going to be fine. Do you understand?
Right.
Yeah. It's going to be fine because we said it's going to be fine. Let's finish up with the couple of stories about the Sony PlayStation Vita out there. This is coming from Polygon and The Verge, so some Vox Media stuff.
Right, so The Verge ran an article entitled Life Support, Can Sony Save the PlayStation Vita? And it's talking about how the Vita's been out for 1 year today. Sony missed its initial Vita sales projections for 2012, At the PS4 event, Sony was talking up the Vita, saying it's the ultimate companion piece for the PlayStation 4. And the Vita can support doing that remote play, so you can stream games right to the Vita. And there's going to be second screen support for phone and tablet apps for Android and iOS for PlayStation 4. But back on the 18th, Sony announced it was going to drop prices of the 3G and Wi-Fi versions of the Vita in Japan only. And the price change goes into effect at the end of February. The Wi-Fi model's down 20%, and the 3G model's down 33%. No price cuts in North America. Darren, the Vita's up against phones and tablets and Nintendo in the handheld space right now. What could Sony really do with the Vita at this point?
Well, see, I think that one of the things that makes Android and iOS and the other like phones really compelling gaming platforms isn't just the fact that we already have the hardware, we're going to have a smartphone, we're going to carry it anyway. It's just that the in addition to the pervasiveness, just the fact that developers, the barrier to entry to go ahead and create a game is, well, you get the dev kit and you start making a game, and then boom, you just publish. And if Sony could find a way to bring the same kind of thing to their developers, so that not just their developers, but open it up to even more developers and kind of make it easier to just go ahead and publish right to their platform. Because typically with consoles, you have to work with the platform to get your game released, get your game into retail and all of those other things. And so if they can kind of embrace the same kind of openness that, say, the Android Play Store has had, I think they could have something there, but it might be a little too late.
Tom, Sony's got a really strange relationship with Android. They run Android on their phones. There's PlayStation Mobile. Would integrating Android into the PlayStation Vita do anything that would help that piece of hardware, or is that just the domain of phones?
If I were Sony, I would be slowly moving people off the Vita, and this may be evidence of that. Sony says the reason they're not changing the price of the Vita in the U.S. is because of currency fluctuation. Essentially, they're already taking less money per Vita sold because of the exchange rate changes. That may or may not be true, but the fact of the matter is, if you want to up sales of the Vita in the U.S., you cut the price and you take it as a loss leader and you try to sell games on it. And I think what you saw with the PlayStation 4 announcement might be an indication that they're saying, look, we're going to come out with an iOS and an Android app that will integrate with the PlayStation 4. And obviously the Vita will integrate more because that's our product and we're not giving up on it yet. We're still making it. But I would expect to see Sony, maybe we'll see something at Mobile World Congress, really pushing phones more and the PlayStation experience across phones, because that was the whole point of not showing the console at the PlayStation 4 announcement, is that we're taking it out of the living room and it's about you wherever you are. So it actually doesn't surprise me that they're not aggressively trying to boost the sales of the Vita.
Sarah, is there anything Sony can do to say, hey, listen, this controller, this Vita, is not just, it's a portable console, it's built for games, you're not just touching a screen. Can they somehow just market it that it's an actual gaming device? I mean, phones are great and everything, but if you try to play a game on it, there's no real response other than haptic feedback. This is actual controllers, actual buttons. Why can't they make that work?
Well, because everybody's already got a phone. I mean, with Android and iOS, it's like you've already got a bunch of people who are like, oh, cool, I can integrate with the PS4. That sounds great. Why would I need a Vita exactly again? Oh, it's extra and cool. Well, the people who care about that have probably already bought it. I think it's a little bit curious that they're not cutting the price in North America. They could say currency fluctuations, whatever. I think it's probably just because it's like, well, if we cut the price, we might sell a few more, but maybe not enough for it to make sense for us, because we just don't think that we're going to move a lot more of these units. That's what it sounds like to me.
Yeah, I'm thinking this.
I think we'll see a Vita phone.
I was thinking we're going to see Vita bundles with the PS4. It's like, okay, look, this is not making a ton of money. We'll have the super bundle. You'll have this extra device. And the Vita phone at this point, you're probably right about that, because Sony's done with Ericsson. They can actually have a true PlayStation phone. We'll see what it looks like. Well, maybe.
And then you can have the Vita phone on Vodafone and a smaller version of the Vita Min. Let's move on to the randomizer. This is really cool. This is part of Freddie Wong's network on YouTube. Brandon Latch does a lot of the effects for them and has come up with a second first-person Mario video, first-person Mario Endgame. It shows the climax of Super Mario Bros. 3 NES from the perspective of Mario. They said it was 50 days worth of rendering. It didn't take them 50 days to render it because they had multiple machines. But if they'd done each, you know, each machine one at a time, it would have been 50 days. And it just looks cool.
This is the stuff Nintendo had to show when they showed the Wii U in the first place. They're like, oh, look, this is the hardware. It's kind of neat. But they didn't really show a ton of games. This idea of going first person into Mario, this is like, you know the game so well, but it just turns it upside down, or actually, I guess first person, because it's just so strange to see it, like Bowser firing right at you. Like, I'm excited. Like, I'd like to play this game.
No kidding.
And you got to go watch the behind the scenes video if you're into this, if you like it, because he talks a lot about how they did it. He's going to do some tutorials about how they did it, and he actually took gameplay of a kind of not a pro Mario Brothers, but an expert Mario Brothers player, so that he could get the most compact run through of that ending possible. Of course, he didn't render the princess. I wonder why.
That's what I was waiting for.
I know, right?
Come on, kiss her already.
Took another 50 days of rendering.
Well,
she's very complex.
Yeah,
Peach is very complex.
Maybe they're working on it. It looks awesome. It's awesome. That would be the game that I would like to play now. Spent a lot of time playing Super Mario Bros. 3. In 1989?
Something
like that.
Yeah, something like that. And the princess is in another render.
Oh, Tom, you never disappoint us.
Don't I? Let's move on to the calendar.
Mobile World Congress starts on Monday the 25th. It runs through the 28th in Barcelona. Also, starting on Monday in San Francisco, the RSA Conference starts Monday and runs through March 1st. RSAconference.com for more information. And also Monday, we're due for the sentencing of Weave in that iPad emails intrusion case where he had publicized a lot of customer information to expose AT&T's vulnerabilities and was convicted back in November of last year.
All right, let's see what's incoming.
Incoming message.
We got a message from Chris W. in Maine. He says, hey, TNT team, I was listening to your section about the PS4, and I just wanted to offer a little insight into Sony's idea of focusing more on the gaming. I think it's time for console developers to return their focus to quality gaming. The current generation of gaming consoles has been all about establishing a multimedia experience, and people interested in that aren't going to lose that, as I has mentioned yesterday. An integrated multimedia experience is now the standard for consoles. This frees console makers to return to their roots and focus on building amazing games with excellent developers while still bringing in a majority of customers, mostly only interested in streaming services and a home entertainment system. Thanks for the great show. I've been listening or watching some of you since I was 12. I'm 24 now.
Oh.
I'm wow. So old. I think it's a good point. I just wonder if it's the best way to market. I get what Chris is saying. Definitely. Focusing on the gaming again is important, and maybe that's a way to win. But it seems like what everybody wants out of their console is for it to do everything. Am I buying the mainstream propaganda when I say that?
Well, I mean, it's got to do everything well, right? So that's the thing. Like, Nintendo did gaming, and it was kind of neat, and their online component was pretty bad. But the PlayStation and the Xbox, I mean, the idea that, look, we all have the same apps, Netflix, Amazon, whatever, that doesn't differentiate them anymore. You got to have some hook, and maybe, crazily enough, it would be games.
Yeah, well, games, it feels like games are already the hook. But maybe it's so clever, it just might work.
Got another email from Steven who says, I'm scratching my head over the topic when you talked about the rumor of HP using Android in a tablet. Seems very odd to me, not because they're a big Microsoft OEM, but because they still sponsor the WebOS open source project. HP is pushing this as a truly open source operating system. If HP doesn't even want to use it, why would someone else? HP would even have booths at several open source developer conferences where they'll be talking about it, pushing open WebOS. This doesn't seem like the actions of a company that's getting ready to turn its back on WebOS and start using Android.
I think Steven thinks HP is logical. That's hilarious.
Yeah, I mean, we talked about what they would do with WebOS if they did go to Android. And I think one of the best suggestions we kicked around on that show was the idea that WebOS becomes an interface like TouchSense or SenseUI on top of Android somehow. And that might be one way they could go that direction. Well, that is it. Darren Kitchen, thanks for joining us as always on Fridays. No matter where in the world you are, really appreciate you going to the extra effort to be with us, man.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm sorry that I had to miss you guys last week, but Well, anyway, tune into hackacrosseurope.com. We'll be in London tomorrow for a fun meetup. And then I'm not sure after that, but I'll see you guys stateside in a few weeks, too.
Yeah, it'll be good to see you. HAK5.org. That's where you all the information about Hack Across Europe there, too.
I should probably put it there, but yes.
Is there somewhere else they should go?
Yeah, Hack 5. I'll put it on there. That's
all right.
It really would make sense for me to do that.
No worries. I wasn't trying to push you. Thanks again, Jared.
Cheers.
All right. Don't forget to submit on our subreddit, technewstoday.reddit.com, if you would like to influence what we talk about on the show. We look at that every day to get ideas of what people are submitting and what people are voting up or down. Also, if you liked a particular point of any episode during any part of the week, twit.tv/bestof, not even just TNT episodes, any Twit episode. Let us know what the moment was. And if you got time code, that helps too. It helps us put together our best of episodes at the end of the year. That's twit.tv/bestof. You can find us on the web at twit.tv/TNT. You can email us, TNT@twit.tv, and give us a call. Leave us a voicemail, 260-TNT-SHOW. We'll be back Monday with Ron Richards of All About Android fame. See you then.